First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, patriots, and jackbooted thug hats alike. It is that time again. It's time for the TNT Radio Show on the My View Matters Radio Network. I'm your host, Dale the Truth, here on the Tuesday Night Truth Show. I'm looking at the Freedom Calendar here over at freedomcalendar.com. It says today is Tuesday, September the 2nd, 2014. And we'll get right at it. We'll start out with this week in history. We know that this week in history in 1774 was the meeting of the First Continental Congress meeting. And then we know also that this week in 1901 was when President William McKinley was shot and died 8 days later. This week in 1901. And then we also know that this week is Jury Rights Day. We'll get into a little bit about that in a couple of minutes after we finish with this week in history. We'll talk about a little bit about jury nullification, which is very important, with this being Jury Rights Day coming up this week. And another story we'll touch on is 31 years ago today, KAL Flight 007 was shot down with Congressman Lawrence McDonald aboard. So we'll grab that in a moment, but we also want to mention that a good friend of the show died last week, and that was Gurley Lloyd Martin, 90 years old, of Masonville, Kentucky. And if people don't know Gurley Martin, he was a candidate for U.S. Senate at the same time that Rand Paul was first running, and also Charles Merwin Grayson III was running. You had Gurley Martin, who I guess would have been 86 years old when he ran then. And we just want to send out our condolences to Gurley Martin's family, because he was an Army veteran of World War II. He was retired from Union Carbide Chemical Corporation. He died at the McCracken Nursing and Rehab Center in Paducah last Friday. So we want to make sure that we send out our condolences to anybody who was friends or family of Mr. Gurley Martin, because he was a good friend of ours. I say that in kind of passing, but he was someone that a couple of times that I met him that we really thought he was going to live forever, somebody who's going to run for Senate in their 80s. And he was extremely nice on the occasions I did meet him, and he was incredibly informed on what is going on in the political world. So we say rest in peace to you, sir. Your sage advice and good humor will be missed by many of us in the good fight. Now, back to that anniversary story of the KAL Flight 007. Again, for those who haven't heard the story, maybe the government indoctrination camps, we know they don't tell you the story. Hell, who are we kidding? September 1st, 1983, the airwaves were abuzz. And again, remember back then the airwaves were pretty much ABC, NBC, and CBS. That's about all it was. I guess PBS. Well, there was no Fox network. There were no cable news networks. There was no internet. And again, the networks were abuzz with reports that a Korean airline flight had been either shot down or forced down off the east coast of the Soviet Union. Yes, it was called the Soviet Union in 1983. The New York Times noted that, quote, early reports are that the plane had been forced down by Soviet Air Force planes and that all 240 passengers and crew members were believed to be safe. It was later revealed that among the passengers on the plane, KAL Flight 007, was U.S. Representative Larry McDonald, Democrat of Georgia, who at the time was also the chairman of the John Birch Society. Early news broadcasts provided differing accounts of what had happened to the aircraft. Some reports the evening of the disappearance of KAL 007 say that the aircraft had landed safely on Sakhalin Island, just a few miles across from the Siberian mainland. C.K. Su, manager of the Regional American Office of Korean Airlines in Los Angeles, phoned the congressman's press aide, Tommy Tolles, telling him that he had just called Korean Airlines in Seoul, and the information he got was that the plane had landed. But by the following morning, which would have been 31 years ago today, September the 2nd, reports were now indicating that the plane had been destroyed by one or more air-to-air missiles fired by Soviet Su-15 Flygon interceptor. And 31 years later, we still cannot determine with certain exactly how the flight was taken down. What happened to it? The official Soviet line at the time was that their air defenses had mistaken a Boeing 747 for a Cobra Ball surveillance plane that had been flying off the Kamchatka Peninsula gathering electronic data about the same time the KAL-007 had crossed it. While this may have been plausible for Soviet radar operators on the ground at the time, once the Soviet pilot made visual contact, it is highly unlikely he would have confused a Boeing 747 for a surveillance plane. You see, the Boeing RC-135, without getting into geek nerd stuff here, is 136 feet in length with a wingspan of 130 feet. Whereas the Boeing 747, in contrast, is 231 feet with a wingspan of 195 feet. So there's a big, big difference between these two planes, and we really doubt that they confused them. Anyway, 39 seconds after the attack on this KAL Flight 007, air traffic controllers in Moscow received a message that the plane was flying 15,000 feet and holding, and then it was descending to 0,000 feet, which was 10,000 feet. And that would have been standard procedure for an aircraft whose cabin had depressurized. Now, there was an article written about this in the New American. I'm trying to find this article here. I talked to you guys about this on the airwaves. This article was put out in 1991. On the 8-year anniversary, saying that the questions remain non-answered. And the article had Robert W. Lee of the New American pointing out that the relatively slow rate of descent of KAL-007 following the attack indicated that the plane was still under some control and was inconsistent with the plane being destroyed by missiles. And while no one knows exactly where KAL-007 crashed or landed, possibly in the water, the Soviets' radar told them that it had descended and was flying a spiral pattern in the Tartar Strait, 24 miles west of Sakhalin Island. The Soviets immediately dispatched a squadron of KGB border guard boats, rescue helicopters, and even civilian trawlers to the island. Now, that being said, no one knows the fate of the plane for sure. In 2008, a New American magazine spoke with Bert Schlossberg, who had done extensive research into the fate of the Korean airliner, for a book he had written called Rescue 007, The Untold Story of KAL-007 and its Survivors. That would be an interesting book. It's actually still available on Amazon, looks like, for about $3 or $4 on your Kindle, Rescue 007. Schlossberg had become closely acquainted with Avraham Shafrin, a major in the Soviet Army and a criminal investigator in the area of the Crimea, which had been employed at the Soviet Ministry of Weapons before becoming a slave labor prisoner. And Shafrin is best known for his 1980 book, The First Guidebook to Prisons and Concentration Camps of the Soviet Union. And because of this close association with Shafrin, Schlossberg became privy to much of the information had been collected. And he says, number one, the findings were conveyed to Senator Jesse Helms and to the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, and Jesse said the CIA could verify the materials, and they did verify the most important part of what Shafrin was receiving, that the plane had landed. And Shafrin's report to Senator Helms, because it indicated that there was a probability of survivors, encouraged Helms to write to Russian President at the time, Boris Yeltsin. Yeltsin came forth with the real-time Russian military communications during shootdown after shootdown. And these communications indicated that the reports of the Soviet interceptors' missiles taking out the plane's left wing and the engine were impossible because the plane could not have flown without a wing. So given the limited amount of intelligence that's available from the Russian government and our own, we do not presently have the means to confirm whether all the passengers on this flight were lost. This is 31 years later. Could it be possible they were picked up and detained by Soviets and their Russian successors? Since Representative McDonald was the most high-profile cat passenger on KAL-007, his fate is of particular interest, and his stature as the leading anti-communist in American government in his day might well prompt the Soviet government, at the time Vladimir Putin was a KGB officer, to cover up what happened to him. There was an interview done with McDonald's wife, Catherine, who replied about whether her husband had any indication that he was a threat to the communists. And she said they had had dinner with defectors from the Soviet Union who had been in Soviet intelligence. She said she remembers it well that they told her in the KGB there are desks. Whoever is at the desk is assigned so many cases of people that they are to watch, to track. And she said several files on the people would be on each desk, except for Dr. Congressman Larry McDonald had his own desk all to himself, the files they had on him. So we're supposed to believe that it was an accident that a plane at the time, KAL-007, which included the leading anti-communist and probably one of the most constitutional guys in Congress, maybe the most constitutional Democrat in Congress in the last 50 years, we're supposed to believe it's a coincidence or an accident that it was shot down by the communists themselves. So again, it's important for those who continue McDonald's legacy in the freedom fight to never abandon the cause and remember that he is a hero in the battle. You see, at the time, Larry McDonald was president of the John Birch Society, but he also was founding what we call the Western Gold Foundation, and it was to create a database on various conspiracies in Europe. And the conspiracy theorists, I don't know what you want to call them, they felt threatened maybe, and they had to make sure that Larry McDonald had to go. That's the truth, if we want to think about it like that it was a major setback to the constitutional movement. And again, just as we've heard so many other times, the NTSB, National Transportation Safety Board, was told to stand down on its intended investigation by the State Department. This is our first aircraft disaster investigation by the U.S. State Department. They did a marvelous job of cover-up. And we wonder why, if we want to avoid the disaster of a world government, and we want to preserve our priceless national sovereignty and live through all time as free men, that is imperative that the American people read The Shadows of Power, and that was put out by Meldrum Thompson Jr., governor of New Hampshire at the time. Now, I believe, without further ado, that we have a caller on the air. This may be our good friend Paul. Are you there?
Hello, TNT Dale. Good to hear from you, man.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well tonight. Hey, listen, I didn't catch the beginning of the show, but the last couple of minutes has got me to wanting to comment on your general concept of people in power will literally do anything to maintain that power. And
definitely,
in the case of a targeted individual, they call anyone else who may die as a direct result of that target individual being killed, they call that rather coldly collateral damage. So if you
collateral
have to be on the wrong plane at the wrong time, you're simply collateral damage to those people who have the power in the world. And if you're implying in your comments that the people in power will do anything to maintain that power, I completely agree with that premise.
Well, most
completely
of them don't
agree.
Know, right. Most of them don't know the story of Larry McDonald, Paul, and that's the thing. Not too many people talk about him. It's 31 years ago. He wasn't a presidential candidate, so he wasn't in the forefront of the media. We didn't have the media back 31 years ago that we do today, so there wasn't the internet sensations that people like Ron Paul have become. But he was he was a leader in the Liberty Movement, and there are all kinds of conspiracies out there about, did the plane get shot down? Did the plane land on the water? Did someone assassinate him on the flight? And he was a Democrat congressman from Georgia, hard to believe, but he was very constitutional. It was a little bit different to be a Democrat 30 to 40 years ago, but he was active in so many conservative organizations, and he had a very conservative voting record. And he was known for his staunch opposition to communism, and he would actually make a lot of speeches out there against the Trilateral Commission and against world government. And this was 31 years ago, and he was the second president of the John Birch Society, and he also happened to be a cousin of George Patton.
Well, again, he's before the Internet, but since the Internet, there's been another notable politically related killing also on the Democrat side, and that is a guy by the name of Vince Foster, who just happened to die shortly after the Clintons started their ascendancy into power. Ed Springsteen talks a little bit about some things that happened up in Chicago during Obama's rise to power. So, again, the basic premise about regarding people in power will do anything to maintain that power, anything, and I mean anything, I think has validity. I know that these figures seem to be national and international, but the premise about people in power will do anything, I think that also holds true locally. I think it's only the techniques that are used locally that might be different, okay?
Well, I would say this. He was a big threat to their globalist plan. He was a big threat to the communists, and he was an admirer of Joseph McCarthy. He was also an admirer of Austrian economics, and he was a member of the von Mises Institute. And you would think someone that big and a congressman, it would be a big deal. And like we said, back then they didn't have the media focus wasn't dead on like it is today, where this stuff might get out. They could cover up stuff a lot easier 31 years ago, and he was about as constitutional as they came. He was an advocate of a tight monetary policy. He was warning about getting away from the gold standard. He was calling the welfare state a disaster. He said we should cut foreign aid. So, again, we would think today maybe this is the reason that high-profile congressmen aren't killed and assassinated like they were in the 60s and 70s and this one here in 83, if indeed that's what happened, because they'll become martyrs and it will get more people for the movement. But I don't know. I mean, do you think if this happened to a Ron Paul, God forbid, or a constitutional person today, Paul, do you think people would just take the government acceptance of what they claim happens to the plane?
Dale, on a lot of different levels, any government explanations are looked at with a jaundiced eye by a lot of everyday working folks, okay? You and I both have talked with lots of people over the years, and they don't necessarily believe the government version of any given event, okay? However, they're not in much of a position to go and want to hold the government accountable for that or to do their own investigation. So in that respect, the government gets away with a lot of stuff simply because it's not a question of not being concerned. It's a question of what am I going to have to sacrifice to make that accountability happen. We are all in really tough situation. We've got roofs to keep over our head and food to put on the table and family to take care of. And then the government's policy keeps us in line by forcing us to do all sorts of things we didn't want to do. So that's why they're able to get away with this stuff. Obamacare is a great example of that. And I like to tell everybody, before Obamacare happened, I had perfectly fine health insurance. It was fine for me. It fit my needs. Today,
right,
I don't qualify for a government assistance, and I can't afford a private health plan. I can't afford
it. And again, this is all part of their plan. We know with the Obamacare,
yes, it is.
Their plan was to get
those
single payer plan, and they had to start out that way. But I'm just fascinated by Congressman McDonald, for people who have never got to study up on him. This is a guy, you got to remember, he served in office in the 70s and 80s before the media was so clear. As I was saying, probably before you heard the show earlier tonight, I was saying at the time You tell me if I'm wrong, Paul. I was only 10 years old at the time, but as I remember, there was only ABC, NBC, CBS, and PBS, right? There was no Fox. There was no cable channels.
There might have been another one, but it was really minor at the time.
Right.
Okay. But those were the three big ones. And
so there was no internet.
I don't even remember.
Radio.
Yeah, I don't remember PBS that well from that era, Dale.
I'm just guessing they were around because they've always used our tax dollars. They've always been around, but there was no talk radio. There were no conservative newsletters. I doubt there were even too many shortwave radio shows at the time. But this is a guy who Congressman McDonald had considered running for president. Now, here's the ironic thing about that. This is 1983, and he was a very constitutional Democrat. So could you imagine if he had lived and ran as a very constitutional Democrat and ran for president in 84? I mean, well, number one, we know that the Democratic Party wouldn't have let him out of the primary, but what if he had been a very constitutional Democrat and ran to the right of Reagan against Reagan? Could you imagine?
Well, that would have been fascinating to see because the electorate's mindset back there in the Reagan era, they were clearly looking for some big change from government. And Reagan came in, and he actually got the big change in government, and that actually helped the country prosper. And the big change was to get government out of the way as much as possible. So if he was going to run to the right of Reagan, who knows? You know, who knows bounty we would have harvested, you know?
Right, and like I said, this is the guy who was trying to get us back on the gold standard. He introduced bills that would repeal the Gun Control Act of 1968. He introduced bills that would repeal the FCC regulations against editorializing and support of political candidates by educational broadcasting systems. That's why I mentioned PBS. He was advocating for the abolishment of the Federal Elections Commission, so I'm sure that wouldn't make the Uniparty too happy. He had a bill to impeach our ambassador to the United Nations. I mean, this guy seems like my kind of guy, and like I said, he was considering running for president, but this is 1983, so you got to figure into the landscape of the time. You had Reagan in there, who had just got elected in 80, and we saw who the Democrats were running. We had just come out of a primary in 1980 with Ted Kennedy losing to Jimmy Carter, the sitting president, who was, little do we know, a lame duck because he was about to get beat by Reagan. And in 84, we had all kinds of freak shows coming out of the woodwork. We had Paul Tsongas and Michael Dukakis and Jerry Brown and Jesse Jackson. So I think it would have been interesting, but this is a guy who is warning us about what's going on. I mean, I could have been a good friend of Congressman McDonald 31 years ago. Listen to some of his quotes. He said, "The drive of the Rockefellers and their allies to create a one-world government combining super capitalism and government under the same content, all under their fascist control." That's what Congressman McDonald said, a Democrat from Georgia in 1983.
Well, no matter how rock solid this guy might have been on the constitutional aspect, the question always has to be asked, would he have passed the populist test? Would he have been able to get enough people in the electorate to propel him into the White House?
Right. Well, I don't think he would have gotten out of the Democratic primary. That's what I said. You mentioned
okay.
Vince Foster, and I think the only parallels there was Vince Foster had to be taken down to help the Democratic president because he was going to get in the way. And this is a guy who, you know, with McDonald, Ron Paul called him the most principled man in Congress at the time. So I'm sure they would have had to find some way to get rid of him. And I just, again, I know it sounds like conspiracy theory, but when you have a guy go down on a plane with 200-some people and nobody knows if the plane landed or the plane crashed, well, that's not altogether different from when we hear about all these candidates going and meeting with these big the government, unilateral, trilateral groups, and they all have to go meet and kiss the ring of these groups, like the CFR, like the Bilderbergs, before they get run for president. Bill Clinton did it. Nobody knew who he was, and he met with them a year before he ran for president, and we had the same thing with Obama. We remember Obama and Hillary disappeared that one particular day in their campaign in the primary election in 2008, and we found out they both happened to be in Virginia, at Chantilly, Virginia, at the Bilderberg Group. And on the day, nobody knew where they were. So, again, I don't think it's far-fetched to think that they might have to take one guy out, just like they would anoint another one. They have to keep it the way they want it to be. They're the puppeteers. You can't have another puppet come in and be in the puppet show. I mean, it's got to be an authorized puppet to be in the puppet show, Paul.
Well, again, I think that anyone who actually makes an effort to learn about these different aspects, you talked about the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, and all of that jazz. I was skeptical a few years ago, and I started studying up on these things, and I haven't become what I would consider to be a scholar, but I honestly believe that there is, and I have maintained this point for a long time, there's a relatively small number of people that control a lot of what goes on in this world, in the world, not just in the United States, but in the world. So, Dale, I think that your working premise about the small group of people summoning potential servants, if you will, to their little royal inner sanctum in an effort to debrief them and indoctrinate them and inculcate them with the values that this little inner sanctum offers. I think that has some merit. I honestly do.
Well, and it leads into a good segue after we get back from the bottom of the hour break here in a moment. It leads into a good segue where we'll talk about one of the most evil men in America and what he's saying this past week about the New World Order, because, folks, nobody paid attention when politicians would sprinkle in phrases about the New World Order 25 years ago in their speeches. And most people would laugh and make jokes when I was telling them about it 15 years ago. Some of you people still do laugh about it. But we're going to tell you in a moment here after we come back after the bottom of the hour break here about one of the most well-known and evil men in the world who was promoting the New World Order just this past week in the second most read newspaper in America. You're listening to the TNT Radio Show on the My View Matters Radio Network.
impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We thank you for sticking with us here on the TNT radio show on the My View Matters radio network. Now, we were talking before the break, and our good friend Paul from Stop It made a good point about what we know, that a handful of individuals are controlling our political, geopolitical system, and it results in an lopsided foreign policy, and that leads me into the piece I was going to talk about, and we'll get back to what I think is one of the most evil men in the world, and he came out this week again publicly about a new world order. One Henry Kissinger, for those of you all who remember Henry Kissinger, one of the architects of the new world order, had a piece published last week, just published on last Wednesday in the Wall Street Journal. It was by Henry Kissinger on called, quote, "The Assembly of a New World Order." And it says the concept that has underpinned the modern geopolitical era is in crisis. So this is an article. Maybe the fact that it was written in the way it was and published in the Wall Street Journal maybe is more important than what he says itself, because this is an article where Henry Kissinger admits, again, that they want to assemble a new world order, and that he's concerned that maybe their idea of a new world order is in crisis. And Kissinger writes, the concept of a new world order that has underpinned the modern era is in crisis. And he talks about, of course, how a pro-Russian fighter is standing guard at checkpoint to Ukraine. He's getting into all the Ukraine versus the Russia stuff. And Henry Kissinger says in this piece he wrote for the Wall Street Journal that the search for a new world order has long been defined exclusively by the concepts of Western society. He goes on talking about us strengthening our economic and our national confidence. He says the effort to establish new world order has in many ways come to fruition. A plethora of independent sovereign states now govern most of the world. The spread of democracy and participatory government has become a shared aspiration. Global communications and financial networks operate in real time. The years from perhaps 1948 to the turn of the century marked a brief moment in human history when one could speak of an incident of global world order composed of an amalgam of American idealism, a traditional European concepts of statehood and balance and power. But vast regions of the world have never shared and only acquiesced in the Western concept of order. These reservations are now becoming explicit. For example, the Ukraine crisis and the South China Sea. The order established and proclaimed stands at a turning point. So he's laying it out here about what he thinks is all the good things that have helped him with the New World Order and all the bad things that have stood in the way of the New World Order. I think Paul is back on there with us. Paul, are you following us on Mr. Henry Kissinger writing in the Wall Street Journal telling you about how you need this New World Order? But we're all kooks and we talk about it, right?
Well, that was actually the reason I called in, Dale, because up until your reading of this article, I don't think that I can recall ever seeing any of these proponents of the New World Order actually explaining what that means. Okay.
Well, they do, but they do it in little pieces that are academic pieces that they know you would have to be somebody like myself or a George Norrie or an Alex Jones to go and research it. So they do it in academia when the common people won't go and look at it. And in truthfulness, the Wall Street Journal isn't really read by the common people, but it is the second most read newspaper in the United States. And the fact that this came out just last Wednesday, and it says, by Henry Kissinger, the Assembly of a New World Order. So it's kind of out there. They don't even try to hide in academia now.
Well, so my next question on that article is, the point in publishing this information along with these details, mm-hmm. is this a case of bragging about their accomplishments so far? Or
I don't know. I think it's his...
Or something else.
I think it's his plea, knowing that the Wall Street Journal is still more financial, still more banksters and globalists. Maybe it's his way of asking for help in pursuing the New World Order, because he knows there are so many of us out there. Look what just happened when we thought that Obama was going to go bomb. I know he's bombing several countries, but remember, we had one in particular that he wanted to get us involved with, and all the people were up in arms, and it didn't happen. So Kissinger is saying that because of these new media, that people are awake. And I think that maybe it's his cry of, you know, the way he sees it, his cry out for help. Oh, you know, you got to be above this this Constitution thing. You got to work with it for this global order. And this is what's going on. He admits it right there in his article that he has a plan for a new world order. And we never denied that he admitted it. Some people do, but we knew that he wanted this. We knew that he wanted it. You have Libya in a civil war. You have these fundamentalist armies across Syria and Iraq and Afghanistan. So to these troubles are added the resurgence of tensions with Russia and China. And Henry Kissinger comes out and says, you know, we've got to establish new world order. It's a spread of democracy and participatory governance. See, they call it governance. That's the way to get away with government. So it's governance. He says has become a shared aspiration, if not a universal reality. So he's pushing it. I think this is his way of trying to get people on his side, because he feels like if he can go to the Wall Street Journal, maybe that'll help. I don't know.
Well, it sounds to me that one of the items that you read pertaining to the number of new independent states, that
mm-hmm.
that number has actually been increasing. Maybe your assessment that he simply sending out a clarion call to his buds that this new world order still has a lot of work to be done, and that they need to maybe redouble their efforts.
Oh yeah,
to get things put back on track. You know, it almost sounds like, Dale, that this new world order movement hasn't succeeded to the extent that they had hoped it would by now. In fact, it almost sounds like it might be going somewhat against him in certain parts.
Yeah, because otherwise he wouldn't be publishing this. If he was pulling the strings and all the puppets were dancing the way that the owners of the marionettes wanted them to dance, then they wouldn't have to go to the people. And now, granted, it's the Wall Street Journal, but still, he wouldn't have to go there if things were going his way. He wouldn't need the help. If things were just going splendidly, he wouldn't be concerned about it. But he released this globalist plan for world order, and it comes out last week in the Wall Street Journal, and, you know, I'm not surprised that they printed it, because they're right there with the globalism. But the fact that, like you said, and like I said earlier, I think he sees it, maybe his plan is on the ropes, and he figures, heck, something has to be done, because there's too many people out there thinking for themselves. They're listening to this newfangled internet thing, and they aren't listening to my plans for a new world order and a global government. So this is his cry for help to the banksters and to the financial world, it sounds like.
Well, it could be. It could be. And I wonder,
the point to me was
Dale,
that this was published. I don't know what page it showed up on. I didn't see the hard copy of it, but I had to find out and find what page this was published on. This was in the Life and Culture section. See, there's the irony there. It wasn't a front page story. It wasn't an editorial. This showed up in the Life and Culture section of the Wall Street Journal.
Well, they would have put some kind of communication app indicating where to find that. I'm sure. I mean, if this is a tightly knit a group as we believe it to be, I'm sure that they have ways of alerting each other to different things. I'm sure they do.
Oh, definitely. Oh, definitely. I mean, again, we talk all the time about these clowns. They drag us into these wars. And you look at the maps. Just look at the geography. I was reading something that a gentleman from the automaticearth.com wrote from earlier this week. If you look at the geography with NATO, there is no NATO territory under any threat of being violated other than inside the narrative. And this is the thing that you have all these, oh, Ukraine, and we're always hearing about how horrible Russia is, and I'm not here to defend Putin, but it's a fact. I was talking about this a year or two ago when Ukraine was just spoiling for a fight. Ukraine wanted a fight with Russia so bad because they knew that Russia would get blamed as being the big bad bully. And Ukraine was going to be the poor little kid who was being bullied. And you look out there, you got these voices in Europe increasingly claiming that the threat to the Ukraine is a threat to Europe. And I said again, the Ukraine, it's just Ukraine. And Ukraine is no more a EU member than it is a NATO member. Brussels seems to want it to be, but that's where the narrative ends. So it's simply being changed on the fly. And now it's become that, oh, Ukraine is fighting this war on behalf of all of Europe. And where we heard this before, Paul, that we got to get involved because all of Europe is in trouble and we got to defend her, you know?
We've already done that once, haven't we?
Oh, I know. And again, you're exactly right. And again, no NATO territory is under threat of being violated. Which what I want to know is, what about when Ukraine has killed over 2,000 of its own citizens? Is that for the betterment of Europe? I mean, the entire conflict could be solved if Kiev would simply tell the leadership that they can be autonomous, but that's not what they want. That's not what Ukrainian leaders want. It's certainly not what Washington and the globalists want, because you look at the Donbass leadership over there. It's one of the far richest regions in the world, especially in that continent. And these people, we don't want to be ruled by the present Kiev leadership. Well, so you kill a bunch of them and you instill fear in the rest of them. That's how we do it, right?
Well, listen, let me pose this to you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
One of the underlying assumptions about this whole New World Order movement is that those people that have the power are in agreement with the plan. And, Dale, I just wonder, maybe we've got certain controllers in certain parts of the globe that are at odds with other controllers, and by God,
yep.
You know, the human tendency is to show the others that, you know, I've got some power and I'm going to use it. Do you see any possibility of infighting among the New World Order?
It's possible. That, again, like you said, it's one of those things they try to keep under wraps. But think about the boogeyman they've created. The new boogeyman name is ISIS. Remember, it was Al-Qaeda for the longest time. And nobody wants to talk about the fact that the United States government, FBI, CIA, funded Al-Qaeda. No one wants to talk about how they created ISIS. But again, like I said, a handful of individuals controlling U.S. politics resulting in lopsided foreign policy. Why Iraq? Why Libya? Why Syria? The countries are thousands of miles away. I know at the expense of them saying, oh, you're isolationist. These countries are never going to cause harm to the U.S., even if they tried. But you have people like McCain and Newland and Albright who keep coming to the surface. You know, you got a United Kingdom run by Cameron who, surprise, surprise, is the descendant of the banksters. And they all carry the world in the same direction towards destruction. And again, let's not forget that all this is going on with these other countries. And what I always tell people about is we hear about how terrible these radical Islamic groups are. Paul, do you remember when the United States government just had to go over and get Saddam Hussein, and they had to kill Saddam Hussein, and he was hanged and all that? Do you remember anything about radical Islamists? No, I mean, my question is, do you remember any radical Islamists in the Hussein regime? No, this all came about. He was a very secular leader. He wasn't a religious Islamist.
And he had an iron fist, kept those disparate groups who, on their own, would have likely continued to commit all sorts of atrocities on each other, he kept them in some degree of control. Yeah,
that's right. He kept his foot on their throat, so to speak. Same thing happened with who else? In Libya, Gaddafi. I mean, what does this tell you? You can even find stuff out there. I can't find the quotes we're saying, but Gaddafi spoke out against the New World Order before. And you look at countries like Libya and Iraq, after Gaddafi and Hussein were gone, now, surprise, surprise, we have all these radical extremist religious Islamist groups. We never heard about this before. It was always the secular Islamists that were ruling these Middle Eastern countries, Paul. And again, all we heard about from the neocons, the Sean Hannitys, the Fox News, Hussein's got these terrible death camps and he's got these torture chambers and look what he and his sons are doing. And no one's claiming they were saints, but are they any better off today than they were when they had Hussein or when Libya had a Gaddafi?
I think that the jury's out, still out on that. But if you were to talk to the people inside those countries, I think that you would get a very strong opinion to the contrary.
Right. And again, you look at all these countries, and especially the citizens and the people who aren't involved in the governments, aren't involved in the standing armies, are pawns in this game. There are usually these politicians, these strong, influential billionaire elites that are behind the wars. They're associated with the money. It's such an obvious picture to paint, but we're called conspiratorists and theorists if we paint this picture that the banksters got the money, military-industrial complex need the money for the weapons, and then the weapons need somewhere to be tested, and it just goes round and round and round. It's not that much different than when we have at the local and state level the politicians and the political action committees. It's not that much different. It's just on a grander scheme when you look at a McConnell or Grimes and you look in and you see there's not much difference between them, and they have this huge campaign that's probably the most expensive one that we've seen in Kentucky. At the end of the day, they're all controlled by the Hollywood elite, the banksters, the big government organizations. What's the difference there? You watch the commercials, and I'm just reminded of what our old good friend, late great Gateway Galbraith said. He agrees with what they both say bad about the other. It's all true because none of them are doing a good job with it, but they follow orders. They do what their bosses tell them. They do what the control freaks behind the curtain tell them to do. They do what the banksters tell them to do. And every human that craves for power and monetary wealth is singled out and targeted by money controllers, Paul.
Your bankster analogy is really, really good because it actually stands the test of history.
Mm-hmm.
If you stop and think about during the feudal times over in Europe, and in particular during the Crusades that went throughout the Asian and European continents, what was the purpose of engaging in those feudal battles? Well, the main purpose, they claim, was protecting one's country. However, in every single case, particularly in the case of the Roman Empire, it was about expanding the empire. And
yep.
Along with the expansion of the empire comes the acquisition of a whole bunch of wealth from the conquered countries. So I think at the core, Dale, all of these conflicts are about enriching. The difference between the ancient times and today is that in ancient times, they weren't called the bankers, but they clearly controlled the purse strings. So you can call them whatever they want back then, but today's banksters are the equivalent to the medieval financial controllers.
Well,
it's
even
simple.
Includes the rulers and the elites that control the economies in Asian countries like China and Japan, Paul, not just the Europeans.
Yeah.
I mean, we see that even until today, the PRC, People's Republic of China, if you want to use that term, and Japanese governments are hitting out at each other, using the media as a forefront, even when their citizens are not keen on pursuing the fake patriotism that their governments are provoking. So it's all cyclical, and we know that there's this propaganda machine at the front of our government, and they have to act accordingly. But I just want to point out to them how outdated and antiquated it is, like Paul just said, and we're about out of time, Paul. We'll have to get our closing comments here. But the fights are just obvious of what's going on. I mean, do you want to waste your life for the corrupt elite to get more and steal more from the people and further enrich their power and their empires? Do the people who aren't getting it understand what is it they don't get when it becomes obvious to them that the clowns will think of ways how to provocate and stir the pot to coax the public into a war. Peace isn't going to make any money for the rich man. Peace is not going to be the way to make money. Let someone else fight their wars, which are none of our business. Again, it's the face of a propaganda machine. We have the boogeyman they created. Excuse me. We have the boogeyman that they helped fund, that they helped organize. Order out of chaos, the doctrine that rules the world. Think about that. In his dialectic theory, George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel conjured a strategy by which the establishment elites can control the masses through deliberately created division. And to define the dialectic method simply, the ruling body must first trigger a problem or crisis that causes the citizenry to react with fear and demand a solution. And then the rulers will offer their solution, which has already been predetermined before they start the crisis. Order out of chaos. This solution will usually entail more power for the elites and even less freedom for the citizens. So you need to see through it. You need to see through the division and the chaos because it has been made that way by a select few. You need to see through what the internationalists are doing and the way they're pushing us through their globally engineered economic warfare. You need to stand up to them and say death to their new world order.
Well, they're here. I locked the door, but I can see them through the window. One of them is waving at me to shut down. I'm giving him the finger. I'll shut down when I'm goddamn good and ready.